Today I will tell you something about how machine learning works, but more from like the low level mathematical fundamentals. Let's first start with like conceptually what machine learning is. Traditionally, we write a program. We give the program to the computer with the input, and the computer calculates the output. In machine learning, we study how we can use like probabilistic statistical methods to let the computer learn the program by itself. Now we give the computer the input and the outputs, and the computer will find out the program by itself. It's a high-level goal. Let's start with functions. A function is something that takes an input and outputs an output. This function can be anything. It can be like a simple linear function, or it can be like a crazy function like we use in machine learning that has like thousands or millions of parameters that are combined in like all sorts of crazy ways. Let's start with the linear function. This linear function has like two constants, k and d. And these constants change what the function is able to model. We call these functions parameters. Come in. We call these constants parameters. And depending on the choice of parameters, these functions can look like wildly different. Here are like three simple examples. To know what parameters we want, we need data. And data is just a huge list of input and output pairs. It can be anything, like simple numbers, images, texts, all sorts of crazy stuff. The only important thing is we need like input and output pairs for the machine to know what to learn the relationship in between. We can also plot this data in like an XY coordinate. Then we can see like, yeah, and this data, it's not random. There's some kind of relationship between X and Y. But how do we define what a good fit of the function is? What relationship is a good one and a bad one? For that, we have the loss function. The loss function takes in all the predictions, the Ys, and also the labels, and calculates a single scalar value that says the losses or like how good this model performs. This is like a basic loss function. It's like the mean square error. It calculates the difference, squares it, and averages it out over all examples. Here we have like two graphs. Like the one has like high loss, the other one low. You see why? It's like when the line fits, the loss is low. But now we look at the loss from a different perspective. We look at the loss in relation to k and d, the two parameters. And we see, obviously, this graph should be like three-dimensional, but I can't draw this, so we only look at it in relation to k. So we see the loss is like some function itself, and it has like a minima. And our fundamental goal in machine learning is, how do we get to the minima of this loss graph? In practice, this graph won't be like even three-dimensional. It will be like in a crazy high-dimensional space. There are like billions of parameters, so this graph will be like has like billions of different dimensions. But it will work conceptually the same. Now we have like a quick introduction or refresh into differentials. If we have a point on a graph, we want to know what the slope on this point is. And we can figure this out if we take a point on the graph, x0, go a small distance from it to the right, have a new point x1, and we see we get the function value and get the difference, the delta y. And by dividing these two, we get the slope, delta y through delta x. Now we can use a mathematical trick. We take the limit of this expression, and then we have the slope or the gradients on a specific point. And yeah, when you use this on the loss function, we get the gradients at this current point. The first point is determined by the initial initial values of the K and D. This normally we can use like a random initialization or all sorts of crazy initialization, but we start somewhere. Then we take the gradients. And with the gradients, we see in which direction we need to change the parameters, K and T, D, to minimize the loss. Here we see like if we decrease the value of K, the loss decreases. So now we need to update the parameters. And we see there's like an inverse relationship between the gradient and the parameters, or how they need to be updated. So the new parameters are, we take the current parameter K and subtract the gradient, multiplied with the learning rate. We use the learning rate, it's like a real small constant, like 0.001, so that we use small steps to get to the local optima. Otherwise, if we use too big steps, we probably overshoot the optima and we land like somewhere completely different where we don't want. So we take a step and we land somewhere else on this curve. Now we repeat just the whole process again. We do the forward pass, we do the predictions, compare the predictions with the labels, calculate the loss, differentiate this loss function, and we get the new gradients and update the parameters again. So that way, if we repeat it a lot of times, at some point, we reach this optima. And when we reach this optima, it's like when the loss doesn't decrease anymore, or after certain numbers of iterations, we have some kind of optimal parameters for this function, for the function to fit the data well. So to quickly recap, it will continue afterwards about machine learning frameworks. We have a function, and from this function we want to know some optimal parameters. With the loss function, we see how well the parameters fit the data. So differentiation of the loss function, we know how to update the parameters. And through repeatedly updating the parameters, we get to a function that fits the data. Now, my background is more like how to build machine learning frameworks. It's not a background, it's more like what they do for fun. I'm part of TinyGrad. It's an open source machine learning framework that aims to be as simple as possible while also be as fast as possible. So now I will also tell you what a machine learning framework does and how it works. Conceptually, a machine learning framework is built in three layers. There's the bottom layer, that's a fast linear algebra library. Something like NumPy, but for machine learning, it works on the GPU. Then we have the automatic the outer diff layer. This is all about differentiation of arbitrarily complex functions, because like this is the main task we have in machine learning. And then there's like some high-level utility classes like layers, optimizers, loss functions, and so on. So we start with the outer diff. In machine learning, we use reverse mode outer differentiation because it's fast and it's relatively easy to implement, or like it's implementable performantly. To visualize it, we start with an example. This is our function. It has like three inputs, and this is the function we want to differentiate. It's like x plus y squared plus 2z. We can also visualize this function in a graph, where we combine the variables with nodes. we have some plus nodes, some squaring nodes, and some exponentiation nodes. And now there's some like mess also involved. So it's not important what's like the formulas. It's just like the important thing is for each node on this graph, we have certain like formulas that explain the rules, the relationship between the derivatives of the input and the derivatives of the output. For addition, the derivative of the input is equal to the derivative of the output. We just broadcast the derivatives. For multiplications, it's multiplied by the value of the other variable. And for exponentiation, it's like 2 times the value multiplied by the output. But this is like, just remember, we have like simple rules for each node on this graph. And then there's the chain rules that basically just says that to get the derivatives in one point of this graph, we can just like chain together the results from the next node together. So we can just apply the simple rules iteratively. So now we look at the first step. It's the forward pass. In the forward pass, we make the predictions. And here with like these three values, so we calculate here the sum is 4, we square it 16, we do the multiplication there, 26, 16 plus 26 is 42. That's the forward pass, that's like what we use to make predictions. Now we want to also get the gradients to update the parameters. So now we go back from the result. We do the backward pass. Initially, we start by setting the output gradient to 1, because we don't care about we only care about the relation of the gradients of the individual variables in respect to the output gradient, like the relative relation. With these rules we discussed earlier, we see that the plus node just broadcasts the gradients. So we have, after this node, both of these inputs have a gradient of 1. The exponentiation, the squaring a node, is like 2 times the value of x, like 2 times 4. Then we need to apply the chain rule, and we multiply this again by 1. So the gradient here is 8. And just the plus node just broadcasts it again. So here we also have like 8 and 8. For the multiplication on this node, the inputs are the gradients of the input are just the value of the other input, and then obviously applying the chain rule. So we here we have like 2 times 1, and on the other one we have 13 times 1. Now to visualize quickly again what the gradients show us. If we now add to the first input x a small change, the change is propagated through the network. We have 4.1, 16.81, and we have 42.81. So you see a change in like 0.1 on the input results in a chain about 0.8 on the output. And yeah, this is what the gradients show us. And with that, we know like how much we need to change the individual inputs, how much that does affect the output. Yeah, and this is already how reverse mode autodifferentiation works. This is like the heart of every machine learning framework. Now the only challenge is to make it fast. How do we do that? We do the calculations on the GPU. GPUs are optimized for doing like highly parallelizable work. In machine learning, we use like linear algebra, and then there's like the stuff is easily parallelizable. Yeah, GPU has like a CPU has like in the order of 10 cores. A GPU has in the order of like between 1,000 and 10,000 cores. And we also have something called like streaming multiprocessors, where we operate the same program on multiple instances of parallel streams of data. that's also something that allows us to go fast. Also, we can do like the data scheduling. Sometimes we can do it static, so we don't need caching, and all sorts of small hacks. And the data we use on machine learning, it's all like tensors. A tensor is just some multidimensional array. And here's an example of like a simple tensor with the shape 2,8. But memory is inherently linear. So we need to somehow map this like multidimensional array to the linear memory. So we have the memory and we map it to the array. And we have like this mapping function. We do like some pointer arithmetic to get to figure out where each cell of this tensor lands in the memory. Here, like J is the outer dimension and E is the inner one. But using pointer arithmetic for this allows us to do some pretty cool stuff, because in machine learning in linear algebra, we use a lot of like transposes. It's just where we change the axis. And such a transpose we can do for free in a way that we just create a new view of the memory. To do a transpose, we don't need to change the memory at all. We don't need to copy anything. We can do the transpose just by changing the way how we access the memory through a different memory mapping. And we also can do reshapes and strides in the same way. And we can create all these four tensors from the single representation of memory without copying any data at all. Yeah. Now we get into the high level bits. Neural network architectures. It's basically a question what function we use to approximate this problem. There's a few functions we can choose. The classical one, the simplest one, is a simple fully connected layer on a fully connected network when we stack those layers. In a fully connected layer, every node of every neuron of the next layer is connected to all neurons on the previous layer. So, yeah. And we use hidden layers in between to learn some abstract features that are between the input and the output. Yeah. Each neuron of this fully connected layers is built in a way like this. We take the weighted sums of all the inputs. The inputs are the outputs of the previous layers. Add some bias, it's just a constant offset, and put everything through an activation function. This kind of models how a brain works, but in like a really overly simplified way. That it's just like it's inspired, it doesn't model anything really. Activation functions, there are like some choices. It's like the sigmoid. The important thing is that the activations need to be nonlinear. There are otherwise a combination of linear layer would result in just a linear layer, so we wouldn't learn anything really. And nowadays we use ReLU, it's just a real simple activation function. Yeah. To give an example, this is like the hello world of machine learning. It's MNIST, handwritten digit classification. So the inputs here are images of handwritten digits. They're like 28 by 28 pixel, and the labels are like the corresponding label. For that, we can use like an architecture like this of just a fully connected network with first the input layer that flattens the image to like just a list of 786 inputs. We use some hidden layer to learn some hidden representations. that can be like vertical lines, it can be like diagonal lines, it can be like some features of the round letter or something else. We have like a second hidden layer, both with like fully connected and relu activation. And then we have like an output layer, but here a softmax activation function to make a classification of these 10 classes. To get the prediction, we see which of these 10 classes has the maximum value, and this is like the predicted digit on this on this image. The amount of parameters in this model is around this. So already this like really, really simple model has about 100,000 parameters, which is a lot. But in relation to like modern machine learning models, it's like not really a lot. Like large language models like the GPTs, they are in the order from like a billion for like the really small ones to multiple hundreds of billions of parameters. But for images, until recently, we mostly used CNNs, convolutional neural networks, that better like use the localized information on an image, because like on an image, the most relevant part is just the part that's around the where we are looking. So we just go with a filter over the image continuously, find some abstract feature in this image, and afterwards we have some max pooling layer where we can reduce the dimensionality of these features, and we do some classification. We have some like fully connected layer in the end that does the classification for us. And then there's like the large language models everybody knows. They are based on a special architecture called multi-head attention. I won't go too much into details here. We can do it a bit in the QA. It's basically an intuition for it. It's like, it's kind of a key value store that can also calculate stuff, but in embedding space that's learnable. But yeah, we won't go too much into this. And yeah, ChatGPT uses this multi-head attention combined with some feed-forward layers to build what we call a decoder-only transformer. And this is more or less exactly the architecture all large language models currently use. It's not too complicated, but there's like lots of details involved to get it working. Yeah, and that's it. Now it's your part. If you want to ask some question, if you want me to go into detail at some point, let me know. Thanks a lot for listening. Yeah.
So if I understood correctly, your framework uses a different numerical differentiation technique?
No, it's reverse mode autodifferentiation.
Okay.
It's not my framework, it's where I'm like part of.
Okay, but the framework you're working on uses a different numerical differentiation technique than usual frameworks?
No, it's reverse mode autodifferentiation, where we build up the graph and then differentiate on the backward pass. There's lots of small details how to get it fast. And it's like where the frameworks also differ quite a bit, also philosophically. TensorFlow builds like the static graph and then has like a really complex compiler to get it fast. PyTorch is like more the dynamic approach. TinyGrad is like something in between where we have this graph we optimize, but the graph is built dynamically. So yeah, we use the same like reverse mode autodifferentiation.
Okay, so that's the status quo in machine learning frameworks. Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
GPU architecture.
About GPU architectures? Yeah. I don't really know too much about it. Like, there's lots of deep details about how to get it fast. I can talk a bit about that. The goal is basically to minimize copying data. Copying data is what, or reading and writing data from memory takes a long time. To do that, we use a technique called kernel fusion. If we have like an expression like 2x plus 1, dumb frameworks use like something like they do the 2x in one kernel, make the calculation read from RAM, or do the calculation write to RAM, and do the plus 1 in a different kernel. Read again the whole data, they do the plus 1 and write it to the RAM again. We do kernel fusion where we read the data once, do the 2x plus 1 in one kernel, and then write the data to the memory. And so we save the read-write path, which saves a lot of time. For architecture-wise, we have like streaming multiprocessors, where we apply the same program on like 32 streams of data in parallel. This makes some problems with loading data from RAM when the data is not continuously in the RAM. If the data is like scattered all over the RAM, because we did some like reshapes and moved the reshapes and transpose and all sorts of stuff, to get these the data for these like 32 different data streams, we need to do like multiple calls to RAM to assemble the data before we can put it through this vector machine. So a lot of like the optimization is also how can we write out the data to RAM that when we read it the next time, the data is aligned as well as possible in the RAM, so we need the lowest amount of reads from the RAM to get all the data. This is like the details. And also, like different architectures have like different sizes, different amount of kernels, different hardware bandwidth limitations, and everything. And there's like different approaches to handle this. TinyGrad takes more the approach that we do like search, where we do like some Monte Carlo tree search and try out different parameters, different reshapes of the data to see how we get the most performance out of it without hard coding every possible for every architecture. Yeah. Anything else? Otherwise, I'm available if you want to talk about stuff like this. Just let me know. I'm everywhere. If anybody's interested in like machine learning and machine learning framework development, here are like some resources. The simplest one is a MicroGrad from Andrei Kasparsky. It's like a 100-line implementation of like a full machine learning framework. It's really beautiful. You can go on the GitHub. And the rest of it, everything else, is just making it extremely fast. It's basically an implementation of this reverse mode autodifferentiation. Then TinyGrad, the framework was I'm part of. Yeah. Alice Adventure in a Differentiable Wonderland is more like, it's a nice, it's also about machine learning framework in like a nice presentation and story. And some like Lex Friedman podcasts. Still any questions left? Okay. Then I think that's it. Thanks a lot for listening.